Well, it's that time again. It's time for another Persiflage podcast. You probably guessed that from the fact that you actually had to do something in order to listen to this. Okay, Persiflage number 9, May 17th, 2001. And what it says right on the front is, what is obviously missing from your life is Persiflage number 9. I guess we're about to remedy that. The first article is intriguingly called Dancing Chickens and Such Like. Apparently there is, or was, my information may not be up to date, somewhere in the world, Hot Springs, Arkansas, a chicken that dances while a rabbit plays the piano and a duck plays the guitar. I'm tempted to stop writing right there. A statement like that calls for either a whole lot of comment or none at all, and I'm inclined towards the latter, but I will go on. When I first read of this, I was a little confused, but then I began to consider the wording of that sentence. You could take it to mean that this chicken will only dance if a rabbit plays the piano and a duck the guitar. And it is easy, really, to picture a chicken with these kinds of preconditions. Maybe she is unmoved by the standard fare on AM radio. She might also steer clear of dance clubs and raves, finding their incessant throbbing not to her taste. Perhaps even Frankie Yankovic leaves her cold. But somehow, when that old duck-rabbit rhythm section rolls into action, she just can't stop her toes from a-tappin'. Do chickens even have toes? Before she knows it, she is transformed into a foul version of Evelyn Hart. Why not? And that's it. The article ends there. I kind of wanted more information than that. Oh, well. The next article is called Tiny Technological Advances. Intriguing. According to the New Yorker, IBM is working on a system integrating facial recognition software, an earpiece, and GPS satellites that will whisper quietly in the ear of the executive using it the name of any employee who walks by. Does this seem an extraordinarily complex solution for a simple problem to anyone besides me? Politicians in ancient Rome used to employ individuals called nomenclators for the same purpose. That seems considerably less ludicrous to me now. At least somebody had to take the bother to learn your name then. It's not like learning somebody's name is that great a chore, and yet it seems to tax people severely. If I had a dime for every time I've been introduced to someone more than 3 times and they still don't have the faintest idea who I am, I'd have at least enough for a large latte. People are so lazy, it amazes even me, and I'm renowned for my indolence. But perhaps it's not just sheer laziness behind these developments. Perhaps it's the neato factor. One constantly hears startling statistics on the latest technological advances, but are these advances really all that impressive? If it's true, for instance, that the average PC has more computing power than the mainframe used by NASA to land Apollo 11 on the moon, then how come all most people manage to do on them is play endless games of solitaire and download internet porn? Or produce silly little magazines. Shouldn't the surface of the moon be crowded with lunar landers by now? Technology is full of false promises. It's as honest as your average horny yabo leaning on the bar at last call who really doesn't want to leave alone. Our limitless longing for new shiny gadgets will end badly. You mark my words. Why is it that we delight in finding needlessly complex technological apparatus to do things that really require little effort? In a recent IBM study, it was found that letters that were handwritten or typed were modified an average of 8 times. Letters produced on a word processor were modified an average of 41 times, but there was no discernible difference in quality. We're daily making our lives more complicated by introducing electronics to do things you could easily do with a pencil. At this rate, it may only be a matter of months before some small, all-black handheld device is wiping your ass for you. Shouldn't plastic things like that end up down there for entertainment purposes only? I ask you. HB. Well, that ended on kind of an alarming note. Next up is a story called The Insomniac. Randy Coolidge, no relation to Calvin, was more than your run-of-the-mill insomniac. It had been months since he had had anything resembling a full night's sleep. He was averaging only 2 hours a night, and those 120 minutes were spread out over a 10-hour period. When his sleeplessness had begun to reach ridiculous levels, he'd started going to bed earlier. Now he was in bed from about 9 at night until 7 in the morning. A lot less than half of that was actually spent sleeping. Randy had begun battling his condition with the usual weapons, sheep counting, hot baths, and warm milk, and moved on to over-the-counter medication. But none of these had proved very effective. The sedatives had merely made him sluggish and grumpy, and as he was already naturally both of these things, he had become a highly unpleasant person to be around. His girlfriend had stopped sleeping over. She said that not only was he difficult to get along with in the mornings, but his frustrated writhings during the night were disturbing to her own sleep patterns. Randy actually found her departure a relief. Previously, he had found the presence of her soundly sleeping form next to him in the bed enraging, and that emotional distress had made it even more difficult to fall asleep. One night, he finally decided he'd had enough. He came up with a plan. It seemed to him that the whole problem was that he was trying to fall asleep. Randy thought that if he gave up the whole idea of falling asleep, his body would take over and it would just naturally happen. After all, the human body cannot go on endlessly without some rest. That night, he sat upright in a hard-backed chair in his kitchen. He left all the lights on. It was the least conducive atmosphere for sleep that he could conceive of. For hours, he sat there motionless. He began to get sleepy. His head would begin to slip towards his chest, and he would jerk upwards into wakefulness. This happened several times. It seemed a promising strategy. But although he hovered between something like sleep and being awake for some time, he did not fall into full REM sleep that night. In the morning, however, he felt more rested than he had in quite some time. So the next night, he repeated his experiment. This time, it worked. After only 40 minutes of sitting in the chair, Randy slumped forward and fell to the floor. He did not wake. He was quite dead. C.F. Maynard. Wow. I didn't see that coming, did you? Whew. Pretty crazy. And we're going to end up, Prayers of Lodge number 9, with the return of the quotations, which is headlined here, The Return of the Quotations, surprisingly enough. So, here goes. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 of them. Ready? You can see no reasons because there are no reasons. B. Geldof. The devil uses insomnia to live twice, while the average Joe just breaks into a cold sweat. Andrei Codrescu. What is one crucifixion compared to the daily kind any insomniac endures? E.M. Chiran. Dying is for sure harder than writing a play. Alfred Polgar. A number of those were tied into the insomnia story. That's interesting. Well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with Persiflage number 10. Wow, 10 of these things already. Hard to believe, I guess. Not really. Anyway, that's it. Goodbye.